Hey guys, this is going to be the assessment of the head and neck. And in class, we hit real hard on the thyroid and lymph nodes and the names and location of said lymph nodes. We are using the Weber-Kelly Health Assessment and Nursing 7th edition textbook. So that's where all the sources and material are coming from the textbook and from the PowerPoint that the instructors have uploaded. And then on top of that, I'm thinking about for each exam making it considered a season. So it would be like health assessment season 2, episode 1 or whatever. I'll have to see if RSS or Apple Podcast will allow me to do that. Regardless, this is going to be health assessment of the head and neck. And just, again, be mindful of the weird offs that the program spits out, like hashtag tag or factor XA, factor ZA, or, you know, CNI for CNE or C cranial nerve 1 or however they say it. So just kind of keep that out on the front of your mind, okay? But this is health assessment of the head and neck.
Patient's here.
Oh, boy, got some blood going.
Yeah, this is with blood.
Well, he's wearing it, too.
Welcome to the bay. When you get over to the bed, we'll go ahead and give you the story. This is all going to happen super fast. Welcome to the emergency room.
70-year-old female, single driver of a vehicle. Appearance that she went off-road into a ditch, rolled over her car onto a trailer, caved in. The top of the vehicle was caved in, so she was hanging out parked in front of the window.
There was 45 minutes of CPR, no return of circulation. We can stop CPR. 603.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, our mission is taking the head and neck assessment beyond just a checklist. Yeah. We want to build a real comprehensive study guide.
Exactly.
Not just for passing exams, but for that, you know, deep clinical insight.
That's right. You asked for the detailed coverage, and that's what we'll do. The need-to-know facts, sure, but also those nice-to-know bits that really build clinical reasoning.
Because this area gives so many clues, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Immediate clues about systemic stuff, thyroid, urological function. It's all right there. A really crucial assessment.
Okay, let's unpack this. Starting with the basics, the physical blueprint, head and neck.
Right. So the cranium, you've got 8 bones, frontal, parietal, temporal, occipital, ethmoid, sphenoid.
And they're fused together.
Yep. Joined by immovable sutures, sagittal, coronal, squamosal, lambdoid, main job, protecting the brain. Simple as that.
Okay. Then the face.
14 bones in the face. But the one we really focus on clinically is the mandible. It's the only movable one.
Right. That forms the temporomandibular joint, the TMJ.
Exactly. And assessing that joint, its movement, any clicking or pain is key.
And other key structures right there.
You've got the temporal artery. You can feel it between the eye and the top of the ear. Palpating that is important.
Why specifically?
Well, changes there, like if it feels hard or tender, can point towards temporal arteritis. And you've also got the salivary glands nearby the parotid and submandibular.
Okay, moving down to the neck structure, what are the main players there?
Muscle-wise, it's the sternocleidomastoid and the trapezius. They handle movement, support.
And they're linked to a cranial nerve.
Correct. Cranial nerve 11, the accessory nerve. So testing their strength is actually testing that nerve.
And beneath them?
The cervical vertebrae, C1 to C7, quick clinical tip. C7, you can usually feel it bulge out when the neck gets flexed. It's a useful landmark.
Good tip. And of course, major vessels run through there too.
Yes, the internal jugular veins and the carotid arteries, really vital structures.
Okay, that sets the stage. Now, the lymphatics. You call them the immune system's watchtowers.
That's what they are. Lymph nodes filter lymph fluid, produce lymphocytes, antibodies. They basically trap bacteria and foreign stuff.
And they tend to group together.
Yeah, usually in clusters, which helps when we're palpating them.
Right. So for everyone using this as a guide, let's run through those 10 essential nodes, the ones we absolutely have to know.
Here, let's map them out. Start near the ear, preauricular right in front, postauricular just behind, then occipital at the base of the skull,
got it.
Then tonsillar right at the angle of the jaw, down along the jawline, submandibular and submental under the chin.
Okay.
Then down the neck, superficial cervical, posterior cervical, and the deep cervical chain. And finally, supraclavicular, just above the collarbone.
That's a great map. And a key clinical point about lymph nodes.
If they're enlarged, we usually say bigger than 1 centimeter. That's lymphadenopathy. It signals something's up. Could be infection, maybe an autoimmune thing, or even metastatic disease.
Okay, so that's the structure. Now, collecting the subjective data, the history.
Right. We always start with the obvious. Headaches, neck pain, limited movement, any lumps or bumps.
But we also need to dig for those systemic clues, right?
Absolutely. Changes in energy level, skin, hair, nails looking different, dizziness. These can all point towards underlying issues like thyroid problems.
And if someone reports pain or another symptom, we need a systematic way to explore it.
Exactly. That's where cold dyspnea comes in. Character, onset, location, duration, severity, pattern, associated factors. It's our framework.
Let's focus on where things can go wrong. Which parts of cold dyspnea do you think get rushed?
Often it's the P and the A pattern and associated factors. Everyone asks where it hurts and how much.
Sure.
But what makes it better or worse? That's pattern. And what else happens with it? Nausea, visual changes, that's associated factors. Skipping those details makes differentiating diagnoses really tough.
Like telling a tension headache from a migraine.
Precisely. You need that full picture.
And beyond the main symptom, the broader history is crucial, especially medications.
Oh, definitely. You absolutely have to ask about meds. Certain categories are really relevant here.
Such as?
Hormonal therapies, contraceptives, menopause treatments, blood thinners, certain heart meds like beta blockers or nitrates that can cause headaches, decongestants, corticosteroids, even some cancer drugs or vitamins. They can all impact head and neck health or presentation.
Good point. And lifestyle factors.
Critically important. Tobacco use is a huge one.
Why specifically tobacco?
The link to head and neck cancers is incredibly strong. Something like 85% of cases are linked to tobacco. We have to ask about it.
And if alcohol.
Also important. Excessive alcohol use can trigger headaches, like cluster headaches, and it also increases cancer risk. These are sensitive questions, but necessary.
And we need to adjust our questioning for older adults, considering typical changes.
Right. We expect to see more prominent wrinkles as subcutaneous fat decreases.
Yeah.
The mouth might look a bit drawn in because of mandibular bone changes. The temporal artery pulse might feel weaker. And you often see that increased curve in the upper spine kyphosis, sometimes called a Dowager's hump.
Good reminders. Okay, let's move to the physical exam itself. Prep first.
Simple but important. Client sitting upright. Remove any necklaces or big earrings. Ask them to stay still.
Yeah.
Explain what you're doing.
Right. Inspecting and palpating the head, what are we looking for?
First, just look. Is the head size normal, enormous cephalic? Is it symmetric? Then palpate. It should feel hard, smooth.
And the temporal artery?
Palpate that gently. It should feel elastic, non-tender. If it feels hard, torturous, rope-like, and tender, that's a major red flag. Temporal arteritis. Needs urgent attention. And don't forget the TMJ, check the range of motion. Should be smooth, no clicking, no tenderness.
Okay, now the neck exam. Palpating the thyroid gland technique matters here.
It really does. The standard approach is the posterior approach. You stand behind the client, use the fingers of one hand to gently push the trachea slightly to one side, and then use the fingers of the other hand to feel in the space between the trachea and the sternocleidomastoid muscle as the client swallows.
And normally?
Normally, you don't really feel the thyroid gland, or maybe just the isthmus feels rubbery. If it feels enlarged, has distinct nodules, or feels asymmetric, that's abnormal.
And if it is enlarged, what's the next step?
Then, and only then, you auscultate over the gland with the bell of your stethoscope, listening for a bruit, a sort of whooshing sound.
Got it. Another really critical check is trachea position.
Absolutely vital. It should be perfectly midline. Deviation is a big deal.
Explain that clinical reasoning, Pearl, again. How does the direction of deviation tell us something?
Okay, so if the trachea is pulled towards the side with the problem, the affected side, it usually means something is causing a loss of lung volume on that side, like atelectasis, lung collapse. But if the trachea is pushed away from the problem side towards the unaffected side, it means something is taking up space and pushing it over. Think a large tumor, or critically, a tension pneumothorax. That's an emergency.
That distinction is crucial. What about neck range of motion?
Check flexion, extension, rotation, lateral bending. Stiffness, especially neutral rigidity, is a late and serious sign of meningitis. General stiffness or limited movement might suggest arthritis.
Okay, back to lymph nodes. We know the locations. How do we palpate effectively? And how do we tell bad nodes from okay nodes?
Use the pads of your fingers, gentle, slow, circular motions. Always compare side to side.
And what are we feeling for? Size, shape?
Yes. Normal nodes are usually small, less than a centimeter, round, soft, or maybe rubbery, non-tender, and this is key, mobile. They move freely under your fingers.
Then abnormal.
Depends. If they're enlarged, tender, but still soft and mobile, that usually points to an acute infection. Think like little inflamed peas. But if nodes are hard, non-tender, maybe matted together, and crucially, fixed, stuck in place, like little marbles that won't budge, that's much more concerning. That pattern often suggests malignancy, metastatic disease.
That mobility distinction is the clincher.
It really is. Mobile versus fixed is a huge differentiator.
Let's connect this to some specific conditions. Thyroid dysfunction comes up a lot. Contrasting hypo and hyperthyroidism, what's the core difference?
Think of it as the body's thermostat or engine speed. Hypothyroidism, or myxedema, is everything slowing down.
So symptoms reflect that slowness.
Exactly. Think cold intolerance, they're always freezing. Weight gain, even if they aren't eating more. Bradycardia, a slow heart rate. Constipation, they feel fatigued, sleepy. Skin gets pale, dry. Hair and nails thin and brittle. Severe cases show myxedema, that swelling and skin thickening.
Okay, so hyperthyroidism, thyrotoxicosis, is the opposite. Engine running too fast.
Precisely. They have heat intolerance, excessive sweating, weight loss despite eating a lot, tachycardia, rapid heart rate, often diarrhea, insomnia, nervousness, fatigue despite being wired.
And there are visible signs, too.
Yes. The characteristic stare, lid lag, where the eyelid doesn't follow the eye smoothly, and sometimes exophthalmos, those bulging eyes. Reflexes are often hyperactive, too.
Understanding that contrast is key. What about headaches? Let's quickly differentiate the main types.
Okay, four main ones to know. Sinus headache. Deep, constant pressure, feels like it's behind the eyes or face, often worse when bending forward.
Right.
Cluster headache, excruciating, stabbing pain, usually unilateral, behind one eye, comes with tearing, runny nose, maybe eyelid drooping on that side, can be triggered by alcohol, often seasonal.
And intense.
Then tension headache, the most common type. Feels like a dull, tight band around the head, diffuse pain, often related to stress.
And migraine.
Migraine is typically throbbing, often unilateral. Mm-hmm. Frequently comes with nausea, vomiting, and sensitivity to light and sound. Some people get an aura beforehand, visual disturbances, usually. Can be triggered by foods, stress, hormones.
Knowing those patterns helps guide treatment. Are there other facial abnormalities we should quickly mention?
Yeah, a few visual diagnoses linked to systemic conditions. Acromegaly, enlargement of facial features, jaw, forehead, nose, due to excess growth hormone.
Okay.
Cushing syndrome, that classic moon face, rounded face, often with reddened cheeks due to excess cortisol.
Endocrinelings again.
Right. Then neurological. Bell palsy is a sudden unilateral facial paralysis drooping on one side caused by inflammation of cranial nerve 7, often viral. And Parkinson's disease often presents with a mask-like face, reduced expression, and blinking.
Good examples. Let's bring this into clinical application. Traumatic brain injury, TBI. Prevention is key.
Huge area for patient education. We need to know the high-risk groups first.
Who are they?
At very young kids, newborn to 4 years, teenagers about 15 to 19, and older adults over 65, mainly due to falls.
Falls are the leading cause in the elderly.
Yes. Other big risk factors are violence, significant alcohol use, and for infants, lack of caregiver knowledge about shaken baby syndrome.
So what are our key teaching points for prevention?
It has to be practical. Proper car seat and seatbelt. Use always age and weight appropriate. Never, ever drive under the influence. Helmets for bikes, motorcycles, relevant sports.
And for older adults, focused on falls.
Exactly. Maintaining a safe home environment, good lighting, remove tripping hazards like rugs, use grab bars if needed. Simple things that make a big difference.
And finally, when we do find abnormal assessment findings, it leads to collaborative care. What are the main risk for categories these findings point towards?
Based on potential issues uncovered, we think about risk for hypocalcemia, especially after thyroid surgery. Risk for cerebrovascular accident if we find carotid bruits, for instance. Risk for thyroid dysfunction, obviously. Risk for seizures with certain neurological signs or head trauma history. Risk for specific cranial nerve impairment, like with Bell palsy.
So any significant deviation means referral.
Absolutely. Document clearly and refer to the primary care provider or specialist as needed. That collaboration is essential.
This raises a final thought. We talked about thyroid links to systemic health. Thinking neurologically, what's one small, maybe easily overlooked finding?
Yeah.
That gives a massive clue about metabolic status, particularly thyroid function.
That's a great question. I'd say it's the relaxation phase of the deep tendon reflexes.
Explain that.
We all check reflexes, the little tap that makes the limb jump, but we often don't pay close enough attention to how quickly or slowly the muscle relaxes afterwards. If that relaxation phase is noticeably slow, sluggish, hung up almost, that's a classic strong clue pointing towards hypothyroidism. Conversely, if the reflexes are overly brisk, hyperactive, that points towards hyperthyroidism. It's a direct window into the body's metabolic speed reflected in the nervous system.
That's a fantastic takeaway. The speed of letting go tells you so much.
Exactly. It's often in those small details.
So we've journeyed from cranial bones and TMJ function through mapping those 10 lymph node chains, contrasting hypo and hyperthyroidism, right down to the speed of a relaxing tendon. This really should serve as that comprehensive reference.
Definitely. Remember, that thorough assessment, looking for those sometimes subtle clues, is what leads to really solid clinical judgment.
So what's the bottom line? The neck isn't just a connector, it's a roadmap to systemic function. And now you have a much more detailed guide to reading that map.